welcome to Book City Roanoke. I'm Douglas Jackson, and for episode 5 of the first season, I'm happy to be speaking with Roanoke-based author Catherine Hankla today.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, Kathy. thanks for being here. Let me tell you a little bit about how we're doing the podcast. Well, first, very importantly, we have a sponsor, and it's our founding sponsor, Book No Further, Roanoke's independent bookstore, putting ideas in your head since 2017, down on the Roanoke City Market at 112 Market Street. And I said pudding, but I should say puttin', because there really is no G on that.
So we love them.
Yeah, pretty really clear about that. And we're recording here today. I've got some production assistance from Brad Stevens. He's a voracious reader, and I want to thank him for helping us out. Book City Roanoke is a lab for the exploration of engagement and equity at the intersection of books and place. Explore our things literary at bookcityroanoke.com. This season, we're taking a look at identity and action, how the written word helps us shape our understanding of ourselves and then helps us put that into action in the world around us. Catherine Hankla, an English professor at Hollins University, is the author of a whole lot of books, and they're in poetry, they're in fiction, in essays. And 2018 was a busy year for her. She released 2 books of poetry through Roanoke's Groundhog Poetry Press, and a book of essays, and I'll let her describe this memoir in essays, called Lost Places, On Losing and Finding Home.
Yeah, I'm just back up a little bit to say that Mercer University Press would want me to mention that they published a book of poems in 2018 titled Galaxies. And then, of course, Lost Places was also published by Mercer University Press. So that was a word from our sponsor. This book, Lost Places, is a book of interwoven essays that address the cycling that we do between belonging and longing to belong, including our attachment to domestic spaces and places where we live, and also places that we desire and our spiritual homes that we find on our own. Because much of our connection with place is made for us by other people, our parents or the people who raise us. And at a certain point, I think we want to find our own place, which may be different.
Certainly. So, and I feel like you've given that description before. So how many readings have you been?
It always comes out differently. That last part I just tacked on for you.
That was great. That was great. Yeah.
And along the way in this book, as you know, because you're a very good reader of it, I play around with so many definitions of home, including the earth itself and our bodies as our first homes. Mm-hmm.
And we love that word. It's loaded with so much.
Mm-hmm. Longing, loathing, leaving, yeah. Returning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a book that could be endless. I need to start something different immediately because this is a book that just could go on and on and on. It could be multiple parts. But you can't say it all, no matter how much you write.
No. But you say a great deal, and it's a really intriguing structure. I think each essay, it's criticism, it's exploration of place in an academic way in some ways, but really it's very, very personal, and that's what really sings through in it.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird book that way. It's a mosaic of different ways that I think about things. Some of it's storytelling, some of it is kind of lyrical writing, descriptive writing, which is something that probably comes out of my poetry, in which mm-hmm. I do a lot of close observation and careful finding the right word for everything. And then there are parts of it that are a lot looser and more exploratory. Parts of it seem more random than they are, of course, but I was trying to weave some of my own daily life into it and just see what happened that day and not take it out, you know. But of course, I discovered quickly that no matter how real I wanted it to be, it was still highly selected. So that comes into play no matter what you're writing to. But I feel like, you know, the most rewarding thing about this book so far has been the way other people connect to it. And I feel like it's loose enough so that it evokes your own response as you read it, right? It's kind of like you're reading my book, but you're thinking about your own book, the book of your life, you know, all the places you've lived, the spaces you've dealt with, the relationships that have taken you to different places and then maybe left you high and dry or returned you to a place, houses you make with, you know, domestic living arrangements. And I have felt in people's responses that they really are just kind of running the movie of their own lives, and that's great. I love that.
That's one of the beauties of reading, I think. And it is a conversation no matter what the work is between the author and the reader.
Yes, yes. And particularly in this book, I want it to be that. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, let's have, if you don't mind, let's have you read a little passage from the book, and then let's talk a little bit more about some of the responses readers are giving you.
This little paragraph is from an essay called Cleaning Out the House that ranges around and starts out with one of my aunts cleaning out her house after living in it for 50 years and having, as many older people do, downsizing. And along the way, I think about a lot of other things in this essay. I've always had an affinity for abandoned, empty spaces and difficult, eccentric people. My father's emotional trials taught me to appreciate the abnormal. I admit I'm bored by uniformity, an irregular sort of person myself. Until I found a completely empty house for sale, I couldn't imagine living there. Most home buyers prefer exactly the opposite, prey to elaborate staging that promises a clean, organized life, dull as dirt. Houses containing furniture sell faster. Houses painted yellow outsell other colors and then are quickly repainted. Why do we prefer purchasing yellow houses but living in white or gray? This kind of daydreaming is best confined to fixer-up buildings because abandoned, odd people, although also ripe for filling with longing, can prove to be more challenging. And yet, love believes it can rehabilitate even the most distant and disaffected. Perhaps it can. I once thought it could. I hope to believe that again.
Thank you. So talk a little bit about some of the response you're getting from readers.
Well, I just want to back up for a second to my drive coming over here. And I think you made this happen because I actually saw a woman walking her dog across the Wasena Bridge and reading an actual book at the same time. She had one hand on the leash and the other hand with an open book. And I admit, I have not seen that in a very long time. And usually, if I've seen it, it's been in a city on the subway system with people, you know, looking at actual books, mainly in Europe. But or, you know, people can pretend to be reading on their phones, but this woman had an actual book in her hand. She's walking, dragging. In fact, I think I know who it is, but I won't say. Roanoke's a very small town. But just synchronicity has arrived at that today. Excellent. As I was driving everywhere.
That's a book city.
It is. It was a book city moment.
When I lived in Scotland, I lived about a mile and a half from where I worked, and I would walk home every day along this long path that was wooded with a sidewalk with a book in my hand as I walked along. And I quickly earned a reputation. I'm not sure if they thought it was a really good reputation, but I thought it was.
Any reputation is better than none, I've heard.
Oh, that's good. words to live by. So how are some folks finding themselves in lost places?
Well, the very first thing I did with this book was run up to Charlottesville and do a book club that takes place in New Dominion Bookstore. And the folks in that book club were mainly talking about their own life experiences in the conversation, which I found fascinating. And maybe I got that rolling by asking all of them where they grew up and where they were from and why they were in Charlottesville. And I mean, I had everything in the group of this book club, from a woman who'd always lived in Charlottesville, and she's probably in her 70s, to, you know, transplants of various sorts. People had moved there to retire. And we're from all kinds of places, grew up all over the world. But people just wanted to talk about their connections to the book, being they wanted to tell me their story. But at the same time, I mean, they wanted to talk about, you know, like concepts in the book. And of course, as you know, in the later part of the book, I talk about doing elder care with my mother mainly. And that's how the interplay of the body as our homes kind of comes in as subject matter. Mm-hmm. It was, part of my daily life for quite a few years. And many people in that group had that experience, of course. As they were also getting older, they also had experience of having the body not feel so much like home anymore. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you know, quoted things from the book. Some really love the Western states, as do I, and wanted to know more about the places that I talked about in the book. Some had been to a couple of them, so it was rangy. But I think that conversation, that very first conversation I had with that book club, kind of sums up what has happened subsequently, that people want to tell me their story when they read my story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that chapter does stick out in my mind. I think it's one of my favorites from the book. But, and certainly there are a lot of memorable instances in the book of different homes that you had had at different points. And I think of the one in Catawba Valley. And
all around Roanoke. Actually, this book is very Roanoke Valley centric. Mm-hmm. Because I've lived here over 30 years, and I've tried to move as many times as possible in the smallest area.
Yeah. Well, you've done a great job, and that commitment to place, I really value it. I think it's an important part of a community to have. That there are people there.
Yeah,
who...
I totally agree with that. And many people think they can solve their problems in their life by doing a geographic. And I think just the oppositely, you got to dig in where you are, go deeper with it, and find the connections and the web of experiences and people that are right there, you know, that you're not seeing because you're miserable in your own mind.
Mm-hmm. So, how do you see that commitment to a place in your creative life? How do you see it shaping your creativity?
Well, I think it's everything from just living slow, that is, you know, paying attention to your surroundings. One of my favorite things to do is just run or walk the same circuit a lot and see how small things change. And I think I got that probably early in my life from entertaining myself outdoors all day long, because I lived in, you know, two teeny little towns in Southwest Virginia where we just roamed all day. And if we ran into an adult, of course, they got to parent to us, because every adult was every child's parent. But I was free to roam, and I really developed a lot of close observation skills because, you know, there wasn't a lot else going on out in that wilderness of childhood, except, you know, the things that you made happen, the make-believe things that you made happen, the games you picked up, the it was a much different sort of childhood than I think kids have today when they're programmed and they're always doing something productive. I had a very unproductive childhood, except in school. I mean, I love being in school, but, you know, there were three full months when we're just ranging like wild things. And I actually think that that was like the basis for all of my writing, was being allowed to wander and just be a real kid, you know?
Great.
And it also socially was so important to me, to be rambling with kids and to have to work out your own problems and to call each other stupid and worse and, you know, make up, break up, all those mm-hmm. things that you do when parents don't intervene, mm-hmm. you know, and hit people and get hit back.
And learn lessons.
Learn lessons, right. Mm-hmm. And then you went home and you didn't tell.
Well, I'm going to have you do some telling in a minute. First, I want to say that we're speaking with writer, professor, artist, Catherine Hankla about identity and action. These are the kinds of conversations that books help us have. Book no further, Roanoke's independent bookstore is a great spot to have them. Stop in down on the Roanoke City Market to peruse a well-curated assemblage of new and gently used books. And yes, talk about some of the ideas they hold. So Kathy, tell me some more about growing up, and books were certainly a part of that journey for you.
Well, I don't think I saw my mother without a book for 98 years.
Wow.
Of course, some of those years were lived without me. But I've heard tell that, you know, the 40 that she had before I was born were also with book in hand. So I know that I wanted to get my mother's attention by writing because she was so absorbed in reading. Of course, she did all the other mother things that people did, like cooking and making sure we had everything we needed. But if she had 1 minute of leisure, she'd sit down and open the book she was in. And that impressed me more, I know, than the reading I did in school, which I loved. And the reading I did through classes, which I was probably not beloved for by my high school teachers, but they let me get away with it. It's that habit just got impressed upon me by, you know, watching mom do it. I'm like, what's in those books? Mm-hmm. I'm going to get me some.
Excellent.
Right? I wanted to read adult books, which I think is a very different thing. There was no YA. You leapt pretty much from Nancy Drew into modern literature.
Mm-hmm. Whatever you thought you might not be supposed to read. To
right,
me,
right. You ran for it yeah. and opened it, and you didn't know what the heck it was yeah. about, but you read it, right? And it gave you a kind of map for all kinds of experiences that you didn't know a thing about. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the best thing about a reader, is like being this armchair traveler to other people's emotions, other people's lives, other places. And when I think about my mom's, you know, endless journey through all these books, she was not a world traveler. She never left the United States. And I count Hawaii as part of the U.S. because she did go there. But she never went to Europe. She never went to Asia. She never went any of these places that people just bop around to today. And yet she knew about all these things from reading. And it was like she'd been there. You know, she was a French minor in college. And I was shocked that she'd never been to France. And I always thought she had been. Yeah. She talked about it like she'd been.
Wow, that's the power of reading.
And, yeah, yeah.
And I'm struck with that kind of unguarded access to books, in the same way that you spoke about the summers of roaming without adult supervision and that exploration. And
oh, yeah, we were never kept from a book. You know, mm-hmm. I think mom just had the idea that if you didn't understand it, it would just wash over you anyway. So, yeah. You know, there's really nothing, no harm could come from that. Yeah. Or the worst, she would ask a question that would embarrass you.
And the whole time you're learning what it means to be an adult, learning what it means to be a person in the world.
Yeah, and I was craving that, particularly as a teenager. I wanted to know everything about adult life that I could figure. And if somebody had told me that there were acres of YA books that I could read, I would have avoided every one of them because I didn't want to read about teens. I wanted to read about adults doing things.
Yeah.
And having adult lives.
And that particular access that we get through reading, the interior access, where people are so guarded in the world, it's impossible to know what's happening inside somebody's
mind. Oh, Lord, Henry James. You know, read endless paragraphs, and then someone has a tiny emotion, and it ripples through everything. You're like, what just happened?
There's a tremor.
Yeah, what just happened? But I think, you know, we talk about access to others through reading and empathy, which it definitely builds. But I think reading gave me then and gives me now access to myself. And it's kind of like a measuring stick between you and what you're reading about. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of, you're thinking about that immersion in other people's things, but you're also kind of like my readers have in this book, Lost Places, you're thinking about your own stuff and how it relates to the other thing, and you're kind of comparing, not in a critical way, I don't mean a judgmental way, but in a way that kind of tells you where you are, who you are.
Yeah. And I know I've had emotions that have been somehow like validated in a book and what's happening to a character where I see the way I reacted and might not have understood how my reaction in the moment, but later on reading about another character having a similar
interesting
situation.
I don't know if you've read this book, Waiting by Ha Jin.
It's been recommended to me. I've got it. It's on my list.
Maybe I recommended it, but that book is so slow and it's so painful. And it is about a couple that has to wait and wait and wait because of circumstances in their country. And at the end of the book, I had such a profound reaction to that book. And I'll never forget my reaction. I've forgotten a lot of the book, but not my reaction, which was just like, oh my God, you know, it just like the whole thing, all the emotions of this couple just sort of washed over me, like almost like stunned me, like a stun gun. I had to sit down, you know, and just be for a long time with that emotion. It's like, it felt like an emotion that I'd never had before, except from reading that book. So it gave me access to something I didn't even know about in myself, you know.
Powerful.
Possibility.
Yeah. How do you see the work you do in the world, and you work with young people who are coming to themselves through literature every day, I would imagine, at Hollins as a professor of English and working in creative writing. How is your own personal work with others kind of guided by that, by your reading as well?
One thing that you quickly discover and working with people's writing is what an intimate task it is. And you have access sometimes to things about the person and problems that their psyche is solving that they don't even recognize yet. And so I think you have to be like very respectful of the work that you're doing and not trespass on people while you're trying to, you know, focus on the craft of writing and bring them along. There's a big spiritual piece to it that it almost, well, I don't want to go overboard with this, but there's a little sacredness to having that kind of access to another person, and they may be revealing something they don't even know they're telling you. And so, but literature itself is like that, right? I mean, the people who want to write are the people who are craving reading for the same reasons that we've just been talking about.
Mm-hmm. I sure am glad it's there. And that brings us to the close of today's episode. And I want to thank Catherine Hankla for being with us. This was about identity in action, and we're at Book City Roanoke. I want to thank our sponsor, Book No Further, on Roanoke's historic city market. Join us next time for a conversation with Roanoke County librarian Sherry Henry on Today's Library as a Democratic Space. Find our things literary, such as author interviews, and find an inventory of local book clubs at bookcityroanoke.com. I want to mention, too, that maybe we'll put some recommendations and some links to things we've talked about in this episode, and a link to Mercer University Press, who published Lost Places on Losing and Finding Home by Catherine Hankla.